KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the emotionally authentic A Star is Born, directed by Bradley Cooper, starring Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott, for consideration in all categories.
It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Rico Galliano, sitting in for Larry Mantle today. Glad and honored to be here. First up this hour, we will be discussing the week's new movie releases, and later in the show, some of this year's most overlooked and underappreciated films. With me are a trio of our city's finest critics. We have Christy Lemire of RogerEbert.com and co-host of the What the Flick podcast, Wade Major of Cinegods.com, and Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide, as well as Cinegods. You are all Cinegods to me. Welcome, everyone. So it is the very last film week of 2018, and we have a whopping two films to review. I think we can get through this. First up, Stan and Ollie. This is the biographical dramedy starring John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan as the comedy duo Laurel and Hardy. It is directed by John S. Baird. Jeff Pope is the screenwriter. They're squeaking this in at the end of December, just in time to qualify for the Oscars. So, Christy, tell us, is it Little Gold Man worthy?
It is quite lovely. The performances are quite lovely. Yeah. Right. So Steve Coogan and John C. Reilly are Stan, Laurel, and Oliver Hardy. And the film begins when they're pretty much at their heyday in the late 1930s. And they're working with Hal Roach, and they're firing all cylinders, and they have various wives and girlfriends, and it's all working out for them. And then you flash forward to the mid-50s. And that brand of humor has long since gone out of fashion. Mm-hmm. And they no longer have the cachet that they did. And they're no longer in the kind of demand that they had been in. And so they find themselves in the position of having to do kind of this comeback tour through Britain. And they are not staying at the poshest hotels. And they are not booked at the most prestigious ornate theaters. They're in these tiny halls, and they're not selling out these tiny halls. And it's how they try to not necessarily recreate, but at least hold on to the last vestiges of that magic. And it's kind of amazing the detail with which these actors recreate, you know, specific dance routines or specific comedy routines, and they have to get that same perfect timing down. And what they're doing looks subtle and effortless, but clearly a great deal of work went into getting all of that right, because there's a ton of evidence to show us what it really looked like when these guys were performing. Sure. And John C. Reilly has to do a whole lot of work in prosthetics, as Oliver Hardy is gaining in girth over the years. And so it's sort of a more physical and kind of a showier role. What Steve Coogan is doing is no less difficult, though. It's very, very subtle. And that chemistry is just tremendous. It's a lovely film. If you love movies, if you love comedy, you'll dig it. But it's also a great undercurrent of melancholy, because you know that this thing that was so wonderful, that they loved and they were great at, that really identified them for so long, is going away.
It's a really interesting dynamic in that this is a UK production, and yes, it's about their tour of the UK. But at the same time, there's something interesting about the idea that certain American figures, and we could talk about, you know, jazz musicians appreciated in France, and you know, others from different eras, where they are appreciated more overseas than they are in their own country at a certain point. And Laurel and Hardy were quite beloved around the world, and more so longer after their success in the United States. And this kind of gets into that, and how appreciated they were there relative to here. It has a lot to say about celebrity. I don't know if it says enough. It was written by Jeff Pope, who got an Oscar nomination for his Philomena screenplay, and obviously has some cred with Steve Coogan.
Yeah, right.
But
starred in that film.
So, you know, two Steve Coogan productions here. But it's it misses the mark just a tiny bit. And it's not enough to not make it a good film. It just feels like a British television production much of the time. It feels like it was dialed back just a little bit. And I understand why, because I was in a room of 17-year-olds after I'd seen the film. And I said, anybody here, you know, fan of Laurel and Hardy? And it was a room full of blank stares. And I realized we've missed the boat with the current generation.
Sure.
Laurel and Hardy are not only not popular, they are unknown.
Yeah, when we grew up, it was on television.
All the time. All the time. So I understand why they had to dial it back in terms of budget, production value, and the whole thing. They had to take a little bit of the edge off because they simply don't have the same cultural awareness today that they used to.
Tim, you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely do with both of those analysis. It's an interesting thing, though. You know, they had a bad breakup. These guys, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of the comedy teens, Dean and Lewis, and, you know, they had this really bad breakup and didn't see each other for years and years and years. And so this was a real reuniting of them. Right. Stan Laurel, he was the businessman and kind of the idea guy. Totally opposite of the character that he played, mm-hmm. you know, sort of the goofball. No, he was the one
Dimwit.
That sort of came up with these ideas and sort of blocked them all out. And Oliver Hardy would be like, oh, I see what you want to mean. And he would just sort of do it, you know. And then there are these wives. who just
the wives steal the movie.
Just
they're
about
amazing.
Steal yeah. the movie. And not that the guys aren't doing great work, but they, you know, they're contained within the thing that they have to do. These women are just absolutely Shirley Henderson and Nina Arianda. As their respective wives. They're just absolutely fantastic, funny, great supporting cast, too.
And Nina Arianda plays Ida Laurel, who was Russian. So she's, you know, the Russian accent somehow gives all of her just snarky deadpan comments about everything this added layer of just joy. She steals almost every scene she's in. But I think that it's a great point that it's more about the women than it is about them on a certain level. Yes, it's about them and their friendship and their celebrity. But the wives are the ones who are sort of driving this and who are making them who they are. And I think we've often overlooked the relevance of the wives.
Yeah, Nina Arianda, I was so concerned at first because it is a big, showy role.
Oh,
I thought, oh, God, this is going to be like a one-note, broad, moose and squirrel hunting kind of Russian role. But she has so much room for shading and for pathos. Yeah, and they could do their own buddy comedy, the two of them together.
Yeah.
Excellent. Stan and Ollie is the film starring John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan, directed by John S. Baird. It's rated PG, and you can see it at the Arclight in Hollywood. Next up on this massive list of two films, A 12-Year Night, another biopic. This one's a drama. This is from Uruguay, written and directed by Alvaro Breckner, starring Antonio de la Torre, Chino Darin, and Alfonso Tort. Wade?
Such a well-meaning film. I hate prefacing things with that. It's well-meaning. It's well done in many respects. You know, Uruguay does not have its own substantial film industry to any great degrees. Many of these things are South American co-productions.
One's Argentine co-production.
So in Argentina has a very robust film industry. But basically, it's a prison movie. It starts in 1973 when the military dictatorship took over, and there are three activists in particular who are thrown into prison and put into these horrible conditions, complete and total isolation for 12 years. And it is essentially their ordeal in prison. Significant because one of them eventually goes on to become president of Uruguay from 2010 to 2015. So, you know, he's kind of, I guess, the Uruguayan Mandela in some sense, and that is what the film effectively celebrates. But if you strip that away, it really is kind of a second tier Papillon, Bridge on the River Kwai, Angelina Jolie did it in Unbroken. You know, it's just a prison film. It's just a guy's in prison in a survival ordeal, and we've seen that so much it just doesn't add anything.
All right, I like a good prison film though. Tim, do you have a different point of view?
Not that much. I mean, who knew they'd treat you badly?
Yeah,
And that Uruguayan prison, man.
It gets bad and then it gets worse, is what you're saying.
Somehow I kind of expected that would happen. And as it happens, a friend of Wade and I, who happens to be from Argentina by way of Uruguay, she was born in Uruguay, and she was in town, and I watched this film with her. And, you know, we watched the film. She's like, he wasn't that great of a president.
Pepe Mujica.
Yeah, he legalized marijuana, but, you know. Yeah. and that in and of itself was a little deflating.
Yeah.
But in the context of just a piece of drama, it's perfectly salvageable, watchable piece of drama, a little historical if you have some interest in this sort of thing. But is it deeply moving and touching, and will it, you know, enlighten you about? No, not really.
It All felt right, to me like if Julian Schnabel had made a prison film, that's what this feels like to me. Because
wow.
It's super gauzy and artful in its brutality. And
that's a good point.
I will acknowledge it gets its arms around a lot because it is 12 entire years in prison, but you also have these flashbacks to who these men were prior to being taken captive, and it's really efficient in just the imagery of telling you who each of these guys were, at least a moment in a field with a kid learning how to ride a bike, tells you a lot about what kind of father one of these men was. There's a funny thing with the prisoner who is a writer, who has a nice little friendship with a couple of the different guards who realize, ah, okay, this guy's useful to me to help me woo my sweetheart or whatever it is. So it has its moments beyond just, you know, monotonous brutality.
Including a couple of really good supporting performances. The one that plays his mother, Pepe's mom, she was extraordinary.
Yes, right. She was. It's A 12-Year Night, written and directed by Alvaro Brechner. This was also Uruguay's official entry for the Best Foreign Film Oscar. Did not make the shortlist. It's unrated and streaming on Netflix, and that's The Week Movies. Thank you, Christy, Wade, and Tim, for the grueling labor you put into watching all two of them. We will be back with Film Week right after this break. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. Welcome back to the show. I'm Rico Galliano, and we are joined by critics Christy Lemire, Tim Cogshell, and Wade Major. We are near the end of 2018. I don't know how that happened. It was a year full of noteworthy cinema. But with everyone talking about the few films deservedly getting Oscar buzz, we figured we should take some time to look back at some fine movies we feel deserve some extra love, that perhaps got lost amidst the 12,000 or so films that got released this year. That's a real number, by the way. I got that off IMDb. Mm-hmm. Our critics have combed through that haystack to find some glittering needles. So for our most overlooked and underappreciated films of 2018, Wade, I want to start with you.
Oh, yeah.
Because about underappreciated.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
At the top of your list is one of the most generally maligned flicks of the year. Tell us what it is and defend yourself,
I'm going to defend Life Itself. And while I defend it, I am not going to make eye contact with Christy because I won't like the way that she's looking at me. I know it. I can feel it just on the side of my face right now. I can feel it. Look, Life Itself from writer-director Dan Fogelman, who, of course, is the creator and showrunner of This Is Us on television, which is a beloved show.
Of course.
Also wrote and directed Danny Collins a few years ago with Al Pacino, another underrated movie, which I adored. I think Fogelman has a very unique talent, which is he's able to get inside relationships and kind of inside characters' heads as a writer in a way that very few other writers do. Hmm. I realize Life Itself, which spins this elaborate kind of multi-generational, multi-continent tapestry of a family's relationships and hopes and dreams, and I realize a lot of people thought it was just, you know, over-elaborate and schmaltzy and really sentimental and contrived and so forth. But it is an incredibly well-crafted script. If you know anything about how screenplays have to be put together and what the writing process entails, it really is a beautiful, beautiful piece of work. And I think people might just simply be in the wrong frame of mind right now, given what's going on in the world and in the country and politics and economics and everything, that nobody really wants to sort of let this gem inside their heart. Give it 10 years. Give it 10 more years. Revisit this movie. You will be shocked how touching it is and how much you like it.
All right. Any comment from the Peanut again. Gallery?
I would think that a movie like this would be exactly what the world needs now, right now.
Love, if Sweet Love?
If it is indeed the movie that you are describing, but it is not. This movie is whack. This movie is trying so hard to be so profound and so poignant, and the ways in which all of the different characters' lives are intertwined is not nearly as, like, exciting and awe-inspiring. Like, you know from the very beginning who's going to be whose daughter and who's going to end up hooking up with who. Yes.
No. I think I knew that.
Yes.
But Christy's not wrong. although Wade's not wrong about something, there's an idea in a through line in this movie that I do like, and Oscar Isaac's performance in particular it was extremely captivating to me. Him and Annette Bening, she's his therapist, and they have these sort of conversations, and that sort of drew me in quite deeply. He's involved in this relationship with this young woman. He's obsessing, and then we start to break the movie apart a bit, right? And that's when we go off onto these other sort of tributaries and how this all comes back around to the central thing. You know, that's quite a journey, and I didn't buy it for a second.
All right. Take your pick, folks, of which critic you want to believe. That is Life Itself, a controversial choice indeed. Tim, you're up. What's your first pick?
Roxanne is my pick, which is just this really neat little movie that's based on something called the Roxanne Wars of 1984. You got to be about 50 to know about any of this. So anyway, there was a young woman named Lolita Shante Gooden, born in 1969. She's about 14 years old in the early 80s, and she became known as one of the best MCs, street MCs, off-the-cuff MCs in Queensborough.
Yeah.
This girl could go. There's a little bit of footage of her on YouTube back during her younger days. Somebody shot with maybe a VHS camera or something or whatever they had back then. But if you want to see somebody go, this girl could go. And she ate grown men alive on the street. This movie opens with a scene. She's 13 years old. Her mom's played by Nia Long. Guy wants to do a rap battle with her. She walks over there. All these people are gathered around. Nia Long, this is going to be a rap battle for $50. She says to her mama, "Is it okay if I cuss?" Nia Long says, "You say anything you want to as long as you get me that $50. And man, we cut. Her life was tough. She did, in fact, build herself a sort of a career as a little nascent rock superstar. But when she was 16 years old, she got involved with this man played by Mahershala Ali in this movie.
Yeah,
and her mother kicked her out. There's all kinds of complications. She got to she turned 16. There was a producer and a bad lawyer. A really interesting story. And this is what's interesting. The young actress who plays her in this movie is an actress named Shante Adams. A recent Carnegie Mellon graduate.
My hometown of Pittsburgh.
This is her first movie. That Shante in her name, she was named after Roxanne Shante. Her mom actually named that. Went back that far. There was a connection all the way back. You look at her, she looks just like Roxanne Shante.
Amazing.
They have the same face. She can MC. When you see her spitting in this movie, that's her spitting. It's just really, really amazing little movie about this little chunk of history in 1984 New York, a foundational figure in hip-hop. And who is it? A woman. A foundational figure in hip-hop is a woman. A little girl at the time.
That I do appreciate about it, because so many films about rap music are always about men, and the women are just like on the side.
All right, Roxanne, that's streaming now on Netflix for those who want to check it out. And let us move on to you, Christy. What underrated movie you want to give a shout-out to?
Thoroughbreds. I love this movie so much. If you loved Heathers, you will love Thoroughbreds. It's about these two teenage girls in a very posh suburban Connecticut neighborhood, and they're played by Anya Taylor-Joy and Olivia Cooke. Anya Taylor-Joy seems totally perfect on the outside. Gorgeous, giant house, and perfectly coiffed at all times, preppy chic everywhere. And Olivia Cooke is a friend from her childhood that she has to reconnect with at the end of her senior year.
Now, wait,
and,
is that the same Olivia Cooke who's in Life Itself? Yes, I think it is. Okay,
it might
carry
be.
On. Carry on.
But if you're going to see one Olivia Cooke film this year, make it Thoroughbreds.
But you don't have to.
So it all comes back to Life Itself. It's profound, isn't it, Wade? It really is. So these two young ladies, they're like 17 years old. They're in this posh suburb. And they seem totally different. And you realize that Olivia Cooke might be a sociopath. She might feel nothing. And her ability to affect emotions is just chilling. And so the two of them come up with a plan to kill Anya Taylor-Joy's stepfather, who is horrible and verbally abusive and just cruel and arrogant. But they need help. And so they get help from the random townie drug dealer played by Anton Yelchin in what I believe is his last film, if not one of his last, and he brings some much needed humanity to it. This is the directorial debut of Corey Finley, who was a playwright for a while, and there is definitely a staginess to the way this film is blocked and shot and cut and just the pacing of it, but it's precise, it is chilling. Beautiful use of tracking shots in this giant mansion to make you feel more and more claustrophobic. And these two young actresses have amazing chemistry with each other. Go see Thoroughbreds.
It really was a good movie. I liked it too.
Thoroughbreds. And we're going to move on back to Wade with a film that ended up on both you and Tim's list here. It's called A Boy, A Girl, A Dream.
And Christy and I talked very positively about this on the radio when it was released. A Boy, A Girl, A Dream, directed by Kasim Basir, written and directed by Kasim Basir. It's his third film. And got absolutely no love, released in one theater in Baldwin Hills. And it's an extraordinary movie, entirely one shot, although I think Christy suspects otherwise.
I believe you.
Okay. All right.
Not everything has to be controversial.
Oh, but we're doing it for the audience. But it's essentially a story of a guy and a girl who meet one night, and it's election night, 2016. But the election's entirely in the background, on the radio, on television. And when it comes into the foreground, it's not as a significant thing. It's like it's interfering with life. Mm-hmm. And there's a really interesting message in here, which is live your life and don't let the media culture intrude and control what you think and what you do. And it's the way that this relationship evolves over several different places over one night. What's really unfortunate here is what I've just described to you is a movie that anybody should be interested in. If I tell you, oh, it's an all-black cast. Well, Sam Goldwyn obviously made a calculation at that point. Uh-oh, you know what that's like. Unless we have a major name, and obviously they didn't, you know, think
Mario that, Hardwick and Megan Good.
They're not big enough names to make this a mainstream film that we
great
could put.
Great performances, though.
So they dropped it in Baldwin Hills, and it disappeared. And it's a tragedy because it's a really wonderful film. And Christy said something super smart, too.
Because
she knows me so well. You did. I'm gonna throw you a bone.
Because
she said, Wade, you know why you like this? Because it's a low-budget La La Land.
Mm.
And she's right.
Yeah.
She's right.
Yeah.
It is fascinating. It all takes place, if you know Hollywood, it takes place in about one square mile of West Hollywood-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it still feels epic, even though it only takes place in a few places. It's emotionally huge.
Beautiful movie, and it's so well-crafted. And the performances are so good, and it comes to this exclamation point at the end that is just poetic, and I love this movie.
There's a moment in that movie. It's just one of the best filmmaking moments that I've seen in years in a movie. When he finally shows her the film that he made, not a word of dialogue in this moment. The camera just floats back and forth. You know everything about them and about what just happened in that scene.
That is called A Boy, A Girl, A Dream. It is a remarkable film. And I'm going to invoke host privilege here and throw in one of my own favorite underrated movies of the year, if nobody minds.
Go ahead.
Right? I was going to do it anyway, even if you did. This is El Angel. It's a crime drama, and it was Argentina's entry for the Best Foreign Film Oscar. Did not get on the shortlist, which does not surprise me a bit. It's based on the true story of Carlos Puch, also known as the Angel of Death, who started out as a petty thief in early 1970s Argentina, but by age 15 was also committing murders. This is apparently a segment we're going to be talking a lot about sociopaths. Watching this performance by a new actor named Lorenzo Ferro is like gazing into the abyss. Amazing. We're going to be back in just a minute with more of our favorite underrated films of the year. This is Film Week.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the emotionally authentic A Star is Born, directed by Bradley Cooper, starring Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott. AFI calls the film a stellar achievement in its own universe, and Owen Gleiberman of Variety calls it an emotional knockout. Nominated for 4 SAG Awards, including Outstanding Performance by a Cast, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Supporting Actor, for consideration in all categories, including Best Picture and Best Director.
It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. Welcome back. I'm Rico Galliano, joined by critics Tim Cogshell, Wade Major, and Christy Lemire. We are pitching our picks for the most overlooked films of the year. There are so many of them, but let's see what else we can cram in here. Wade, what is next on your list?
Borg versus McEnroe.
Excellent choice.
Which Neon completely bonked earlier in the year, and I don't know why. Even if you're not a tennis fan, this is an amazing movie. Shia LaBeouf and Sverrir Gudnason play McEnroe and Borg, and it centers around this legendary U.S. Open final in the 80s, which I watched at the time.
I watched it too.
And even though I remembered how it ended, and I remembered every beat and every twist and turn of that incredibly dramatic thing, it didn't matter because it's not really about that. The recreation of it technically is amazing, but it's about celebrity. It's about how two very different people deal with fame, deal with anger, deal with ambition, and just cope with what is arguably the changing of the guard, in the greatest changing of the guard in the history of tennis. And it really is a remarkable film. It's so well crafted. I don't know why this film didn't do better. I don't know why it wasn't pushed better.
All of the crafts, particularly those two performances, which are just astounding. I'm a ridiculous tennis fan from way back in the day. Could have gone pro. But nevertheless, these are just amazing. And I literally did, like Wade, watch this, and they duplicate it with just such specificity. It's just amazing what they're doing here. And then these performances. I say on this show quite a lot, I'm a big Shia LaBeouf fan. I know we poke at him a lot. But that young man can act, and that's just all there is to it.
Right. It'd be very easy for him to just do, like, over-the-top McEnroe shtick, and it's much more than that. And you see the childhood reasons that he is that demanding of himself.
Yeah, and for Borg, too, you know, what he went through as a tempestuous child to sort of pull it all back in. And what Borg keeps inside is what makes him, and what McEnroe lets loose is what makes him. And they're mirror images of each other. It's extraordinary.
I love a movie that doesn't have a bad guy. And in this movie, really, the bad guys are inside both
of
them.
That's it. That's it.
It's a really remarkable film. That's Borg versus McEnroe. Go check it out. Christy, what's next on your list?
Support the Girls, which maybe isn't totally overlooked at this point because Regina Hall has duly gotten some awards love for her performance.
So.
Yes, absolutely. It's about this highway sports bar, kind of like a Hooters-ish establishment in middle of nowhere, Texas. And Regina Hall is the manager of all these young women wearing itty-bitty t-shirts and little bitty jean shorts. And it takes place mostly over the course of a day at this just totally seemingly mundane American place, the sports bar with curves called Double Whammy. It's totally subtle.
That name.
Yes. Andrew Bujalski wrote and directed this. And he finds such humanity just in the prosaic beats of their daily life. And Regina Hall has never had a role like this that's allowed her to show so much of her talent. She's been around forever. She's always reliable in everything. What's fascinating here with this role is you get to watch her calibrate who she needs to be with each person as the day goes on to try to put out various fires, whether it's the cable has gone out or some obnoxious customer is there or she's dealing with her soon-to-be ex-husband or whatever it is. And you watch her just be steady as the crisis is mounting all around her. It looks like a Shaggy hang of a movie, and it is a primal scream.
And it literally ends with a primal scream. No spoilers.
There you go.
Now, I love this movie, too, and it is Regina who's the thing. And let me say this about that performance of hers. She's playing the sort of quintessential thing that any black man who grew up in a household with black women understands completely. The need to be the mother to just everybody. She's everybody in that movie's mom. She's even the goofy owner's mom, and he don't even know it. And how she has to shape them and maneuver them and push them. It's just this amazing, amazing performance. And I'm watching this movie, and I'm looking at her, and I'm like, that's my mom. That is my mom. And that's the way she's been doing things for 50 years. Really a great movie.
There are some good things in it. I'm not a fan of Bujalski. He's the father of mumblecore, going all the way back to Funny Ha Ha. And that's a style of filmmaking that grates on me. But I credit the actors for growing beyond his limitations.
Yeah, Shayna McHale also, by the way, a great performance
so great.
From her. Support the Girls, that's from writer-director Andrew Bujalski. By the way, here's some trivia. His next project, he wrote the screenplay of a live-action remake of Lady and the Tramp that is due out next year on Disney's streaming service, Disney Plus, for reals.
Are the dogs going to talk?
I believe they do, actually.
Okay.
We'll see what that happens.
That's a paycheck right there.
Tim, what's next on your list?
Lean on Pete, definitely overlooked, slight little movie starring Charlie Plummer, Steve Buscemi, Chloe Sevigny. It's about this young man, played by Plummer, who's this very slight boy, this actor. He's this very, very thin little fellow, anyway, and it's important in the context of this movie. Because the thing that you feel as you're watching this movie about a boy and his horse, basically, a horse that he steals from Steve Buscemi, because this racehorse hasn't been winning. And Steve has made it clear what he does with horses that don't win. They end up in Mexico. He falls for this horse, and he just can't let that happen. So he just steals him. And his father's this no-account guy who just can't, he's not really a bad guy, but he can't take care of anything. And suddenly he finds himself on the road with this horse trying to get to his aunt's house out in Wyoming someplace, 2,000 miles from where he is. And it's just him and this horse, and he's talking to this horse, and this movie takes its time. And you have to sit there, and you suddenly realize this is just a deep existential dive. And you find yourself so afraid for this boy. A knot was in my stomach for this entire movie as this boy and this horse walk across the country trying to get to his aunties. It's patient, it's profoundly civil, and it's a really good performance by Charlie Plummer, Steve Buscemi, and Chloe, and that horse.
I have to say, every time I've encountered this one, I've been on a plane and I've had the chance to play it, I've thought one of two things is going to happen here. Either this is going to be incredibly corny, or I'm going to be weeping in front of a lot of strangers.
Yeah.
You say it's more gonna, the latter.
You're going to weep. It got me very, very deeply, and I deeply appreciate it.
Anyone else see this one?
Yes, I liked it. I don't think I liked it as much as Tim, but certainly has it has its bright spots.
All right. We got enough time for one more from you, I think, Wade. The Female Brain.
This is super fast. I just want to shout out to send a shout out for The Female Brain, directed by Whitney Cummings, her directing debut. You know, I have never been a huge fan of Whitney Cummings before as a comedian. I didn't like her sitcom, but she finds her groove here. She's able to sort of assert herself. This is based on the nonfiction book by Luann Brizendine, I guess is how you pronounce the name. And she turned it into this incredibly poignant comedy drama study of the battle of the sexes and how men and women misunderstand each other and what makes a relationship work with these different couples. And it's just poignant and touching and incredibly accomplished. And I really hope Whitney Cummings keeps making movies as a filmmaker.
All right. Yes,
Blake Chrissy? Griffin's good in it.
Really good.
That's it.
No, everyone's good in it.
Chris, do you
want to say it's a little bit like life itself, but see. You know.
But it has Blake Griffin, which makes it vaguely better.
Yeah. Chris, do you want to close us out with Disobedience?
Yes. I love this movie so much, and it came out way earlier in the year, so I suspect a lot of folks forgot about it. But it's Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams, and they knew each other in this Orthodox Jewish neighborhood of London. Rachel McAdams is now married to Alessandro Nivola, who was also a childhood friend of theirs. But that thing that connection between these two women was always there and is still there. Rachel Weisz has to come back when her father, who's the rabbi, dies. And it is passionate. It is bracingly honest. The women have gorgeous chemistry with each other. Alessandro Nivola is very good in it, and what could have been a thankless role as just the guy on the side, you really feel for him as well. This is a sexy and lovely film.
Rachel Weisz doing amazing work also in The Favorite.
Love The Favorite. Yeah. Best movie of the year.
And folks, yes. Sadly, I believe this is all the time we have. So much fun. Thank you, Christy, Tim, and Wade. And thank you, Film Week listeners, for sticking with me throughout this show. I am Rico Galliano. It has been a pleasure filling in for Larry Mantle. He will return for the next Film Week. Have a great weekend. And here's to more great movie going in 2019. Go out there and enjoy that lack of LA traffic right now.